Ken Bernstein joins us on the long line. Ken, of course, blogs nationally, recognized a nationally political blogger as Teacher Ken, and he is also a public school teacher, and he joins us on the phone. Ken, how are you?
I'm fine, Corey, and you?
Good, very good. Thanks for your patience. We've got a bit of an incident here in Charlottesville this afternoon.
That takes priority.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Ken, we were talking in our last segment with Lieutenant Governor Bill Bowling about the financial crisis and sort of how this is rippling out across the political world. You know, here we are just a few weeks before the most important election here that we have every 4 years, and both campaigns are reacting to it. What are your general thoughts about what's going on?
Well, I think it's more of a I don't think either candidate really knows what to do at this point, because I don't think anybody really fully knows the dimension. We talked offline very briefly about this. The difference between bailing out Lehman and bailing out AIG is Lehman, there's risk, and a lot of people are going to have risk that's involved. But AIG, because of how it's been involved with the default credit swapping, which underlies a great deal of what's been going on financially, if they ripple, fall down, they pull a whole lot of other people down with them. And there was a real fear of a total collapse. I know that Governor David Paterson of New York very much wanted an intervention because he was afraid of what the impact would be on Wall Street and employment there.
Again, we were talking offline about folks may not know that in Russia they had to close down trading in their market because it was a total meltdown.
They closed it down twice. They closed it down yesterday and they closed it down again today because they were melting down so much. We have automatic levers on our stock market that have been placed since the 87 meltdown. When the next day, in fact, we came very close to not having a stock market until the Fed put money in so the specialists could deal because they've been so heavily wiped out. That was a 500-point drop on a 2,250-point base. Our 504-point drop 2 days ago was on a basis of over 11,000, so it's a much smaller percentage. Basically, if the stock market drops 10% in 1 hour or 30% in the session, they shut it down just to stop because of the panic selling that can go on. And I understand, and don't ask me to explain this because this is outside my bailiwick as a government teacher. There is what's called naked shorting or naked short selling, and my understanding is that they've now banned that to try to put some hold on what was going on with downward pressure on the market. But where it's going to come out, I mean, the market went up for a while with the $86 billion being pumped in by the Fed, but it crashed at the end of today, and the market was down, another 440-some-odd points today.
We're talking with Ken Bernstein, a public government school teacher, and he blogs nationally, a recognized national political blogger. He blogs as Teacher Ken. And Ken,
I have another gig too now. I'm blogging on education at the New York Times website.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, congratulations. Yeah, that's right. Let me ask you this, because we're hearing now both campaigns are the most often heard word now is regulation. Rush Limbaugh is saying today that the problem that this proves that all regulations are bad and that what we should do is get rid of every regulation on the market and that this wouldn't have happened. But we're hearing both the Barack Obama and John McCain campaigns now talking about regulation as a way of trying to curb this back end. We were talking with Lieutenant Governor Bill Bowling in the last segment, and he pointed out that one of the real problems here was that we could sort of point to the American consumer for taking loans that they shouldn't have taken. Your thoughts?
Well, there's some element of that, but in fact, we've been moving in this direction. There were a reason why there were regulations put in place, such as Glass-Steagall, keeping the investment banking separate from retail banking and from stocks. I mean, there was reasons for this so that you didn't wind up with this kind of impact. What has been totally unregulated is derivatives, where you're basically betting the house on something that does not directly tie back to any kind of underlying value. You also had the further thing of bundling together all these subprime mortgages so the people who are holding the paper have no idea or the ability to trace back to something that's underlying. The first thing to say is corporations always want regulation when it favors them. They want strict patent protection. They want strict copyright protection, et cetera, et cetera. Even Adam Smith was not somebody who believed in an absolutely, totally unregulated economy, because he said when he talked about a pure market economy, it would have been where everybody has perfect information, but everybody doesn't have perfect information. I think this is more of a problem for McCain, both because as chairman of Commerce, he oversaw a lot of the deregulation, and because if you wanted to point to one person most responsible for what we're dealing with right now, it's Phil Graham with what he did when when he was in the Senate, and Phil Graham is still advising John McCain. So there seems to be a contradiction with John McCain becoming a newly interested in regulation when he was all for deregulation before. Clearly, you have to have some balance. Clearly, you don't want regulation to the point where it strangles innovation. But you also need to have some sanity in what goes on in the marketplaces and with what we've been doing financially, and lots of people have been talking about this for a number of years, and this is also, just like the savings and loan crisis, a bipartisan process, because you can see roots of this in the Clinton administration as well.
We're talking with Ken Bernstein, a public school teacher. He blogs nationally, a nationally recognized political blogger. You can also read his blog at the New York Times. Ken, is this a... From what the reading I've been doing, that we seem to be seeing the results of a continuum that started with President Reagan. You can see it with the SNL crisis, which, to my knowledge, the total bailout was $160 billion for the SNL crisis. And it seems to be this deregulation of the financial markets that started in the 80s. We've been seeing these little flare-ups, but a lot of people have been predicting something like this for a long time.
There's a question that comes in. Can we ever reach a point that we say that something's too big to fail and that therefore we have to do it because of the interconnectedness of the economy? People will talk about that if there are not consequences for the bad decisions, then people are not discouraged from being making similar kinds of bad decisions in the future, and they call that a moral hazard. We can look back, going back to two earlier things prior to savings and loan and prior to that. You had Chrysler, which was bailed out, and you had New York City, which was bailed out. Now, whether we think those were appropriate or not, we set something of a precedent that certain things were not going to be allowed to fail. You then had, and I cannot remember the name of it, but it was the long-term capital leasing, whatever it was, about 10 years ago, where there was none as a bailout. So now everybody goes and they take risk on the assumption, you know what, we're going to probably get bailed out, we can afford to take the risk. It's all interconnected, and everything is so interconnected that when one piece starts to come out, no one's quite sure where it's going to end. And I just, you know, if you just do the numbers, starting with the bailout of Bear Stearns, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, and with what's just happened, you and I each owe someplace about $1,100, because we're now someplace around $330 billion of additional federal funds that have been committed to bailouts this year.
Amazing. We're talking with Ken Bernstein. He blogs nationally as Teacher Ken. So the political ramifications of this, we're seeing on the right, we're seeing a man who has fought regulation against the financial markets for years and was behind the scenes, was one of the Keating Five, which had made maneuvers behind the scenes to stop regulators mm-hmm. from dealing with the savings and loan crisis in the late 80s. John McCain is now saying that he's all for regulation and he wants to create a commission to look at what happened. On the left, we've got Barack Obama with now a two-minute commercial, which is rolling out in battleground states, where he's laying out, this is exactly what I'm going to do, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Your thoughts?
Well, I'm going to skip the Obama ad, and I just want to go to something very basic. Throughout this election cycle, if the issue is who you trust more on the economy, even before the latest, that tilted towards Obama. Even before this stuff broke, the polls were starting to switch back. There are, I believe, 5 national tracking polls out there right now, and one of them has the race tied, and every other one has Obama ahead. Or you can look at, there have been 3 polls out in Virginia in the last week. One has it dead even, one has Obama up by 2, one has Obama up by 4. If the issue gets fought on the economy, that is advantage to the Democrats, and particularly at this particular moment when people are worried about pensions and housing and everything else, the Democratic brand tends to sell a little bit more, even before you get into the question of McCain having to change a position that he strongly advocated in the past. That doesn't mean this won't get totally replaced by something else down the line. But right now, it tends to tilt the playing field presidentially back towards the Democrats, and I think fairly heavily.
McCain has a 30-second spot just out that is sort of trying to, you could sort of say that they're trying to make it look like a almost like a national security crisis.
Because, well, it is.
Yeah, but I mean like a war or something, and they're saying, you know, John McCain, he knows how to fight these kind of situations, And so they're trying to sort of make it sound like almost like an invasion. And thank goodness we have John McCain as a candidate, which I don't know if that's going to work.
Well, I think the test on that will be, as it happens, the first debate a week from this Friday is on domestic issues. So I would suggest that Mr. McCain, who at one point said he didn't know that much about the economy, he was going to read Alan Greenspan's book, when he wants to say that the fundamentals of the economy are sound, ought to listen to the Alan Greenspan, who said this is the worst thing he's seen, at least in the last 50 years, if not in the last 100, and it's got a long ways to go. I don't know how that will play out within a debate format. What I'm suggesting, and suggesting rather strongly, if the main focus remains the economy, that is a very, very difficult thing for John McCain to have to campaign on, just because of his, you know, the fact that it's not his strength. He wants it on national security, and or he wants it on personalities.
We're talking with Ken Bernstein, a nationally recognized political blogger. He blogs as Teacher Ken, public school teacher, and he also blogs for the New York Times. Your thoughts on Sarah Palin?
The McCain campaign did not have done the vetting job she should have. There was a, you know, explosion. It did energize the base. I was talking to a congressman in a Midwestern state who said in his state the impact would be that the Republicans might hold a couple of more rural districts they were in trouble on, but was offset by suburban women who, the more they learned about Palin, the more turned off they got. If you take a look at what has happened recently, as more details have come out on different things, she's got the worst positive to negative ratio of any of the four candidates. I don't think, you know, regardless of whatever else you want to say, you take a risk when you take somebody who has not been in the public eye and does not have experience. You may get away with it, but it also can absolutely blow up on you. I think it will have succeeded in motivating the evangelical base that was not interested towards McCain. That may hold a couple of states he was otherwise in danger of losing. I do not see how it fundamentally changes the race, because I do not see where she is going to help him win a single state that John Kerry won. Everything is being fought, ultimately. There's going to be competition in places like Pennsylvania for a while, Michigan for a while, and so on. Iowa's already off the table. New Mexico looks to be off the table. You hold the Kerry states and the two of them, you're at 264 electoral votes. And Virginia by itself, or Colorado by itself, would put you over the top.
So Virginia really, truly is critical for both candidates.
It's critical for McCain. I don't see how he gets there. If he's losing Virginia, he's probably losing other things. The bellwether state most people would look at when you're thinking about a Republican is Ohio, because no Republican's ever been elected president without Ohio. Okay, but there are so many states in play that maybe shouldn't have been. There are some polls that came out today, state polls, that have things like, and this was CNN Time, they have Florida dead even, and that is, I think, in part a Palin effect, because there's real worry about her in the older Jewish community. Indiana, McCain down to +6. North Carolina, McCain down to +1. Ohio, Obama +2. Now, that may be noise, that may all be within the margin of error, but what you're looking at is a circumstance where, okay, Obama's pulled out of Georgia because Bob Barr doesn't have any credibility. Obama's not going to win Texas. But he's got a playing field, and he has more targets of opportunity for where he can clinch this thing, and it's going to be much harder for McCain. He has to pick off, basically, to survive. He is going to have to win either Michigan or Pennsylvania, and right now, I don't see him doing either one of those things.
Do you see Bob Barr having an effect in any of the battleground states?
That doesn't seem to be playing that way. The one interesting thing about Bob Barr is he's filed a lawsuit in Texas claiming that both Obama and McCain need to be knocked off the ballot because they did not meet the state law in terms of requiring to get on the ballot. If, in fact, he succeeded in doing that, then McCain cannot win a majority in the Electoral College. Take Texas as 32 electoral votes away from him, and there's no way he's going to get to 270. But I just don't see that Barr is going to play all that much. There was some thought that he might play in Georgia. Nationwide, he's drawing about 2% right now.
We're talking with Ken Bernstein. He blogs nationally as Teacher Ken. Tom is on the line in Charlottesville. Tom, you're on with Ken Bernstein. Go right ahead.
Hi, Coy. About 4 months ago, Coy, I called your program, among some others, and wondered aloud why in the world the media was ignoring one of the most important resignations in the history of our nation, one of the most brilliant financial minds graduate of Harvard and Yale, and the Comptroller of the Treasury of the United States of America, resigned, telling the world he was resigning because we had too many IOUs out there, and the U.S. was in financial trouble and ready for bankruptcy. This is a man who gave two decades of his life to the financial welfare of our country. And why in the world is the media still ignoring the premonitions of this man that are coming true?
Yeah, I remember that. I remember
David Walker, right?
David Walker.
Tom, thanks for the call. Ken, your thoughts?
There was one point, there's an incident that goes in, and I'm not recalling all the details, where David Walker was trying to get some information for the GAO, and he actually lost out on this in court. It may have had something to do with examining the Cheney Energy Commission, if my memory serves on that. That's a little bit rusty. Everybody started worrying about Social Security. Medicaid is a bigger problem because it's bankrupting a lot of states right now. We have unfunded liabilities in terms of federal pensions that are out the gazoo that most people do not realize with what's out there. And we have been propping up our economy by borrowing money from other countries and selling off American assets to other countries. So much of what has been happening in this country has been being fueled by credit. The subprime mortgage is one indication of it, and when any part of that starts to go, take a look at what's happening to local governments. Subprime mortgages means all of a sudden there's a glut of houses on the market, depresses real estate values, which cuts the income that's available to local governments. I teach in a county in Maryland which is talking about maybe having to furlough 20% of its people, its workforce, because the revenue is not going to come in with the collapse of housing prices. So you're seeing this on lots of levels. The stock market is one indicator. Obama, I think, had one rather interesting comment. He took the idea of trickle down and said the pain that a lot of people have been feeling is now trickling up to the investor class. We'll have to see how it plays out.
Ken Bernstein, one of the smartest political bloggers in the nation today. He blogs nationally as Teacher Ken. You can read his work on a number of national political blogs, including over at the New York Times.
Well, that's not political. The New York Times has a number of us as teachers blogging about the start of the school year. And while I am actually talking about how I teach the election in my classroom in the recent things, that one, if you go to the New York Times, it's lessonplans.blogs.nytimes.com. And there are an interesting group of six teachers who post over there, and you can post comments as well. But I'm doing that more from the standpoint of education, not political.
There you go. Ken, thank you so much. Appreciate your time. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Take care, Coy.